I'm Dustin Harder, and this is Keep On Cooking. Hello, and welcome to Keep On Cooking, the only podcast dedicated to plant-based cookbooks. I'm your host, Dustin Harder, and they love him, they hate him, they all say, shoot, he looks good, and he's a hell of a guy, he's a load of fun. He looks good, but you got to get to know him. It's Mr. Rossetti.
That was a performance. Thank you.
And I will send a free cookbook to anyone who can slide into my DMs and tell me where I pulled that. Would you call that a melody? Whatever that was.
Or a sample.
If you know it, if you know what that is, the first one to slide into my DMs and tell me the artist and concert that is from, you get a free cookbook of your choice, of mine. Not like any author,
not any.
Like one of the three that I've written. You get a free cookbook. Anyways, what's the Lolo Roro?
The Lolo Roro. Everything's good. You know, we're here. Happy New Year.
Great.
We are in 2023.
Done. That's great. So again, we've been saying this for the last few weeks, but this is the last one here. We've got, we're on video right now. We're at YouTube. And I say it's the last one, meaning the interviews up until now have not been on video. So you get David and I on the intro, and then the video has been audio with the interview because we recorded it some months ago. But after this one, we've got video interviews coming your way. So, you know, if your thing is to tune into YouTube and watch the videos, great. That's fantastic. There's going to be even more beautiful faces popping up on YouTube for you to see.
But besides ours.
Besides ours. Okay. But for now, let's talk about refrigerators.
Yes, let's do it. Let's talk about some fridge love.
Oh my goodness. I tell you, so David can really, really confirm this. I had a meltdown with our refrigerator probably a year ago. And this is, we're in such an upgrade from New York.
Correct.
Like, so for
size
me to
wise for sure.
For me to have a meltdown about this refrigerator says something, because when I tell you I made our New York situation work for so many various things, including, I mean, I wrote the first two cookbooks in that
correct.
That kitchen, but it's not a normal size fridge in New, at least in our New York apartment. It was smaller.
It's like a baby fridge.
Oh my goodness, but I made so much work in there, and that poor fridge, what I put it through, what I learned from our wonderful author that's going to be on today is, you know, we put our fridges through a lot. And so with our fridge, we went to buy a new one and they couldn't get it up our stairs. So then we said,
nightmare.
So then we said, okay, let's like take a step back. What do? We called the refrigerator repair people. They came, they fixed our fridge. And in that moment, cause things were not working. The freezer wasn't working. The doors were, things were falling. Like it was just, but also I am a madman with refrigerators because I cook so much. So I put them through a lot of, I'm just tossing things in. I'm, you know,
in so, and out things in canisters. Yeah. Like it's the shuffle game
canisters.
Of like canisters, the but shuffle game of but, where are things? Like I see it way back there, but how do I get
yeah,
to it?
Yeah. 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 So David wasn't home for this, but after we made that decision and the fridge got fixed, I literally had a conversation with my refrigerator where I was like, I appreciate all that you do for me. We need to get through this together. I don't know how you got up the stairs, but no one else is getting up the stairs, refrigerator. So please, let's be friends. And we have been ever since.
Yeah.
But I learned in this interview that's the key. You got to make friends with your refrigerator. So this Kristen Hong, I'm telling you, she's a powerhouse and so smart. And I enjoyed chatting with her so much. I kind of want to be best friends with her a little bit. And she writes the blog Hello Nutritarian, where she shares about fridge organization, meal prep, and plant-based recipes, of course, and runs a successful Instagram of the same name.
Yes, yes. On her Instagram, Hello Nutritarian, she showcases her well-organized and gorgeously styled fridge photos. She lives in California with her husband and two children. And I will say, like, there's something so satisfying about even just the cover. Everything's kind of got its place. It's in containers. It's gorgeous. Like it just looks, you know, like sometimes you open your fridge and it's just like chaos. Like that is,
it's so beautiful,
flawless.
And so, and if you follow her Instagram, she, oh, the things she posts were the, she did this one, it was, I think it was a partnership and it was all about citrus. oh. And she opens the refrigerator. It's all these lemons. It's gorgeous. It's so beautiful. So it's really fun to watch her Instagram. And you'll hear in the interview, I said to her at one point, I said, you have more than one fridge. She's like, oh yeah, we have three refrigerators, because it's her job. Like, sure. I mean, this is what she does.
That's amazing.
She also chats in this interview about navigating a family that has multiple dietary preferences. So I loved getting some insight into that, because I know so many people are trying to navigate
that's hard.
And really, she covers so much about making the refrigerator work for you in so many ways, and also the ins and outs of everything from proper storage of food to refrigerator mechanics. Even it's remarkable. So please welcome to Keep On Cooking, Kristen Hong of Hello Nutritarian. She's got fridge goals, and she's not afraid to share them. Please welcome to the Keep On Cooking podcast, founder and creator of the popular blog and Instagram, Kristen Hong. Kristen, thank you for being here.
Oh my gosh, Justin, thank you so much for having me. And I'm just so excited to get to talk to you today about fridge love.
Yes, I'm excited to talk to you about fridge love. And we're going to start things off first with our icebreaker question. We just passed Halloween. What was your best Halloween? It's a two-parter for you today. What's the best Halloween costume, in your opinion, that you've ever had? And what's a Halloween costume for the future, maybe, that you want to dress up in?
Okay, I love Halloween. Although this Yes, I feel like people who love Halloween, like kindred spirit there. So I love this icebreaker question. And I thought on it because I've had some really good costumes, but I'm going to go with Amy Farrah Fowler from The Big Bang Theory. My kids are 13 and 10, and we kind of started watching it a few years ago, and my son especially really liked it. And so I just went to the thrift store and kind of got, like, you know, the grandma standard stuff, and left my hair unwashed, and I just made a button that says I heart Sheldon Cooper.
And oh, very good.
It was so cool walking down the street, because everyone who would like point and laugh or make a comment, I was like, oh, they watch Big Bang. So it was a really fun last minute costume that I really enjoyed. And then for future, I've always wanted to do like a really authentic, like almost like a cosplay version of Mary Poppins, because I just loved her growing up.
And you could have a bag and pull things out of it.
Yeah.
I love that. Have you ever been to any sort of, you know, cosplaying? I just went to Dragon Con for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever been to anything like that?
That sounds intense.
Well, so you're not wrong, right? And a friend just texted me randomly, and they were like, hey, I have tickets for Dragon Con on Friday. Do you want to go? And I was like, so out of my box to say yes. So I was like, you're going to say yes, and you're going to go. So I said, sure. And I went, and I was sort of just like very charmed by it, because I thought, well, what a fun thing for people to get together. It's not Halloween, because it wasn't, to me at least, maybe I missed something, but like it wasn't based on dragons or anything like that. Basically, everyone got to wear whatever the heck they wanted to wear, right? Oh. So I was like, yeah, so it was like Halloween came early. It was about a month or so before Halloween. So I don't know. It was just a lot of fun, and people dressed up, and it was cool to see everyone's different costumes. So it surprised me and delighted me, I should say.
Oh, see, when you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, there must be like everyone's dressed like a dragon, or like several people are in a massive dragon costume. Like,
that's what I thought too. That's totally what I thought. I was like, I'm going to go and think this is so weird and I'm out of my element. And I was like, oh, this is like, right. I also kept accidentally saying drag costume. Con, and my husband was like, it's honey, you're not going to drag con. I know that's what you wish you think you were going to. And I was like, I know, I'm sorry. I just keep, it's hard to, you know, dragon con is what it was. So, well, one of my favorite costumes I ever did was the Britney Spears Hit Me One More Time Catholic schoolgirl outfit.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
but I did it with a little headset and with a pregnant belly, because this is like when she was like, you know, starting to pop out babies all the time. And I was like, I'm pregnant, Britney, hit me one more time.
Oh my gosh. And, I have to post that. That needs to be a throwback picture.
I can't find any pictures of it. It was back in the day of like disposable cameras. So I'm sure I have one in a box somewhere, but it's not, you know, like cell phone time where we were all snapping pictures.
That's right. But
I do need to find one, and there's got to be one somewhere. And my future costume, I have two different ones, and they're both joint costumes with my husband. I want to be Mario and Luigi one
year. Oh, yes. And then,
he's like tall and has the Luigi look, and I'm shorter Mario mustache, and it all works out.
So cute.
And, And then I want to do Romy and Michelle too, which is a total departure from that. But
I just saw, I forget which celebrities did this, but it was super cute. Romy and Michelle. I love that idea.
I love that. I'm gonna have to look it up and see who they did it for Halloween this year.
Yeah, this year. Look it up.
Okay.
It was super I'll look cute. It up
because I'm into anything Romy and Michelle. I love, love, love.
Well, I'm gonna look forward to that.
Yes, yes. I promise to post. We're in the cell phone age. There will be pictures, I promise. Well, you speak about in the book, in your intro, about this a little bit, but can you share with the listeners about your sort of, you know, a little look into your history and sort of where you were before Hello Nutritarian and what led you into creating Hello Nutritarian?
Absolutely. So it kind of just happened by accident. I was pregnant with my second and my mom came to visit. I hadn't seen her in a while. I live in California and all the rest of my family lives on the East Coast in Florida. And she came out, and when I saw her, I was like, oh, mom, you are like glowing, your shape, your figure. Like, she just looked like she had reverse aged like a decade or more. And I was, you know, I was very pregnant and I was like, what have you done? And she said that my dad happened to watch a PBS special with Dr. Furman, who was the founder of the Nutritarian Diet. And he just kind of got his legal pad and just jotted down the parameters. And my dad does the cooking at their household. And he just started making the food. And they had been eating that way for a few months. And that's what they had been doing. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, the proof was just in my mom looked amazing. So I decided to get the book. And I remember reading the book while I was eating like a big bag of chips and just being like, oh my gosh. I was like, this is so true. This is awful. You know, crunch,
how
crunch.
Funny.
And yes. I was like, all right, I decided, I'm like, I'm going to give this a try when my daughter is 6 months, because I feel like that will be manageable. Cause I also had a toddler at the time. And I kind of just, all right, it was 6 months, like happened real fast. And I was like, okay, I'm doing this. And I had no plan. I just had the guidelines from the book and it was really, really hard. But at the same time, it was highly effective and it just improved my mood so much. You know, in the beginning, there's definitely a withdrawal period, but then I improved my mood so much by the end of the 6 weeks and I really started enjoying the food. And I was like, wow, this is something really special. And I decided at the time I had a mom's blog called mymamatoldme.com where I would do like crafts and some recipes and stuff like that. So I decided to keep a journal for my 6 weeks. And really soon I saw that that became the most popular content. And it was great because I wanted to continue with this. And I decided, you know, I will just kind of keep talking about the Nutritarian lifestyle on my blog. And then a few years later, I just fully converted to it because that was what I was posting about most of the time. But in those early days, the real problem for me was I essentially was triple cooking. Like my husband didn't want to go Nutritarian. My son was a toddler and I had a 6 month old, under one. And I was realizing that if I wanted to really make this my lifestyle, I had to prepare ahead just for me so I could cook on demand for the family. So that's when I started prepping and just getting as much produce into my fridge as possible, getting it arranged in a way that was inspiring for me and made me feel excited about the lifestyle that I was pursuing. And then also just having everything on hand so that my stuff, I knew I'm good for it. Like I would invest on the weekend to know that my health was taken care of and my priority was taken care of. And then I was able to, you know, do everything else for the family. And then that kind of rolled into my blog and I created a prep program for people who wanted to also do this and were having trouble converting in their own households. And then from there, I started posting pictures of my fridges, my prepped fridges on Instagram. And then that became really popular. And I would get a lot of questions from people about how to store things and food prepping in general. And I kind of was like, I really need to do something with this because I don't know if this needs to be a blog post or some kind of content. And then years later, that's what turned into Fridge Love.
When you talk about cooking for multiple people, it took me back to my private chef days, and there was this family I had, and everybody in it was eating a different diet.
Oh my gosh. And
this book would have saved me, because I was constantly just there were, you know, given the day, because some of the kids lived in one home and then another, like there'd be 4 to 6 people in the household that I was cooking different meals for, and wow. I was losing my mind. So that alone is a huge obstacle to sort of conquer. So, I mean, congrats, hats off on that, you know, managing different diets. And then also, it's easy when you're doing that and you're trying to take care of your own health to sort of give in, right? To be like, well, I'll just have what they're having because I can't prepare for myself right now. So, I mean, you really created sort of a path for yourself, but then for everyone else with this great book, Fridge Love, to be able to navigate that. And that's a huge, huge obstacle to sort of conquer.
Yeah. And I call it, I look at us as dietarily blended, and it really is hard. And a lot of people are in this same situation. I kind of did a random poll on my email list and also on Instagram, and I was surprised how many people are in this, especially now with all the different food religions, I call it, and like different sects and all these different, you know, everyone has a very specific way they're eating. And so it's really hard when you're in a family to navigate that. And yeah, I was on a yo-yo, like a roller coaster, for a long time, because I would give in because I was just exhausted and I just hadn't put the effort into it. So, you know, it really made me learn that if I wanted to eat this way, it was an investment of time that I put up front. And that would allow me to get all that energy and the good feelings I would have from this lifestyle. And I learned this is what happens when I don't prep. This is what happens when I do prep. And I kept going and gravitating towards that feeling of, you know, empowerment. And I call it in the book self-love, because I really believe that you're investing in yourself. And especially for moms, I think it's really good to fill your own cup before you're filling everyone else's.
Yes. You're no good for everyone else if you're not filling up your own cup.
Yes.
You got to. And for those wondering, this Nutritarian diet here, the definition of Nutritarian, as clearly stated on Kristen's website on the homepage, is a person who habitually eats a high nutrient, whole food, plant-based diet, avoids processed foods, and cooks without oil and excess salt, and then says, oh, and feels absolutely amazing doing it. So you get that bonus there. Well, assuming you like cookbooks, do you remember what your first, I guess maybe it was Eat to Live, but your first Nutritarian or Whole Foods plant-based cookbook was that you owned and cooked from the most?
Yeah, it started with Eat to Live, the classic, and he has the recipe section in the back. And I kind of started there. And I also realized, like, my taste, probably because it was the beginning, a lot of the recipes weren't working for me, which is what made me do a lot of recipe creation and then put those recipes up on my website, because I think I had a different palate. I kind of like the saltier foods, which is hard when you're limiting salt. So I tried my best to make recipes that kind of fit more of my flavor profile, but that was the one. The funniest part is I was not the biggest cookbook connoisseur before writing my cookbook. Sure. Cause I didn't ever anticipate this being a cookbook. I mean, I'm glad that it was now. I really wanted it to be a guide, which it is. I really look at it as it's 3 books in one, but, so I really wasn't into it. But then once I started the cookbook writing process, I started getting really into cookbooks and have made way more cookbooks now than I did before. And
oh, I understand that.
Yeah. And you just have a new level of appreciation. I mean, cause it is its own unique art form.
I mean, it really is. And when we're looking at Fridge Love, let's dive into it now. Fridge Love, organize your refrigerator for a healthier, happier life. In part one of the book, Practicing Fridge Love, you talk about the organization of refrigerators as, and you already mentioned this a little bit, but drumroll, self-care. And I loved that. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that for us?
Yes, I think that one of the things that we interact with the most in our household is our refrigerator on a daily basis. And I really think it needs to be a source of inspiration
instead of us being completely exasperated by it and just like not even wanting to look in it because it's so disheveled and what is in there and what is that gross leftover that's in the rotting in the back of the drawer, you know?
I love it. You mentioned it's, it, you know, a fridge used to be a place where leftovers go to die. And I was like, oh, I remember those days too.
Yes. So because when you're eating plant-based and it's hard to eat out, especially as a nutritarian, you really want to make your fridge a source of inspiration so that you're like, yeah, what can I make? Like, what do I have available to me? What is the bounty that I have right now? Like, so you're looking at it in a positive way. And it's really easy, like afternoon project that you can do that can have a direct impact on your happiness for like the rest of the week. So I really wanted this to be something that people could realize you don't have to have like a perfect Pinterest, Instagram, TikTok fridge. You can start where you are and you can level up over time and actually see the benefits of taking a little bit of time, 15 minutes a week to start off, and invest that time in organizing your fridge, showcasing the things you want to eat more of, and creating a space that you actually, that's a welcoming space for you.
Everyone listen up. You can do it over time. You can take baby steps. You know, we live in a world, and I'm guilty of it too, where we're, you know, all or nothing. You go all in and then, you know, it doesn't work after a week or two because you're exhausted or, mm-hmm. you know, you're just attacking things in a certain way that's not working for you. And you're like, well, then it doesn't work. When the reality is we can take little steps at a time to make big changes in the long run. So I love that advice.
And I agree. It's a product of our times because even I have to capture attention, right? When I'm on social media. So you see like a big fridge reveal and it's all looking amazing. But when I wrote this book, I really wanted this to be practical for real mm-hmm. people. And I think that you really do have to start small. I did. When I first started out, it was literally, I washed out some old tubs of hummus that, you know, like I went into my recycling bin and I was like, I'm going to put cut fruit in here. And it was just washing stuff out, putting it in my fridge and just being like, oh, wow, that really paid off for me in this next week. So it was a very, in my own experience, it was, oh, let me try this. Let me do this. Let me use what I already have. And so that's a theme that runs through the book because that's actually what happened. That's how it started for me.
Well, and when we look at frequently asked questions, which is another part of this section, you give a great list of most frequently asked questions from, you know, glass or plastic storage containers or pre-washing produce. But if pressed, given all of your experience in this now with the blog and the Instagram, what would you say is your number one question that you get?
Definitely is glass storage better than plastic?
That's and what's the answer?
You know, I actually went to a real food scientist and had an interview with him for this book, trying to answer that question. And here's the issue with food sciences, because I had to do a lot of research for the book. And food science is based off an industry, meaning the food industry. So a lot of the colleges that do studies on these questions are doing it for the food manufacturers. And so there's not a lot of concrete studies on glass because everyone who's in the pre-chopped business is doing it with plastic. So there's tons and tons of research about the different kinds of plastics and thicknesses and different polymers that are used. And so they have that down. They know which is the best plastics, but that is only to get, let's say, pre-chopped, you know, at Trader Joe's, like pineapple or cantaloupe to the grocery store, looking presentable for you to buy. But that's not talking about the home cook's experience. Right. So in my own experience over the years that I've been doing this, I found that glass definitely has a longer shelf life. Now, when he and I talked back and forth in our interview, he really felt like that had a lot to do with the strength of the seal on a glass product. Specifically, the ones that I was using were glass mason jars with a screw on top, and then like Pyrex snap lock containers. So they're forming a very good seal. The other thing we discussed was temperature regulation. So say that I have a salad bar that I made in my fridge, which I always suggest that people do. You take that out and you have it on your counter while you're assembling your salad, there's going to be a change in temperature from that. I believe, and when we were discussing this, I think he was leaning that way, was that the glass is actually maintaining the temperature inside of the container better than the plastic is transferring that temperature to, you know, your countertop or your tabletop or whatever. So it really is scientific, but I will say, like, as a general rule of thumb, that glass containers usually have tighter, better fitting lids in general. But I will also say from my own experience that a glass mason jar that you buy, I've done spaghetti sauce jars with their original, you know, normal lid, and my right. salads last just as long in that glass. So I personally like glass better than plastic from my own experience. But then again, a perfect case here is my mother-in-law, who comes and stays with us frequently. She loved all my containers. She went out and bought them all, but she is much older, and she realized that she couldn't handle the heavy glass containers and that the lids were difficult for her to get off sometimes. So you also have to think, right? You have to think about your own personal situation and your own ease of use. So people always ask me, what is the best type of container? And I'm like, it really is dependent on your goals and what your stage of life is and where you're storing and what kind of food you're storing. It's not a simple answer. And it sucks because I really wish that I could just say, that's it. Those are the ones, you know, but it really is all dependent on your situation. And that's why in the book, I really, there's not a one size fits all approach to this. Everybody's fridge and ambient conditions, meaning the temperature and humidity in the area around your fridge and your kitchen, is different and unique. And you cannot apply things across the board. You have to understand what's happening. And that's why I go into those 10 freshness factors in the book, so you can figure out where you are on the spectrum.
You sure do. You are very thorough. And I want to go back to something you just mentioned, which was goals. And you talk about goals in here, from the fresh fridge, the chop fridge, the no cook fridge, and the prep fridge. And the coolest thing you mentioned here is picking a fridge setup that not only aligns with your goals, but also the time that you have to achieve those goals. So I'm curious, which fridge setup works best for you and the goals that you've determined? What is Kristen currently using?
So Kristen is fluctuating, just like I believe everyone does, because
yes.
For example, I just had a big Instagram project where I'm working with a brand, and I had to literally make a Thanksgiving last week. This last weekend, like, so the day before Halloween, I was making a Thanksgiving because I had to film this. So that week I did a chopped fridge because I knew that I was going to be cooking this meal and the kids and everyone, we were going to be eating from this meal. And so I wasn't going to do a fully prepped fridge for that. And I also knew that I needed things to be already chopped for this to actually work on the day of, like, cooking all these dishes. So the chopped fridge is the one I go to the most, especially when I have special projects going on or I'm doing recipe development and I can't do a full meal prepped fridge because it just wouldn't make sense. So that's like my go-to. I kind of call it like an intermediary between a fully prepped fridge, because you can easily take chopped produce and either assemble a salad, make a quick, you know, cooked dish or soup from that. So that's like my happy place. I don't like going down from there. The fresh fridge to me is like when I'm on a trip and I will usually get a place that has a kitchen, and I kind of just do a quick thing to make the fridge look good, get all the foods that I want us to eat out in front. And then that's kind of the thing. So my base level is usually always the chopped fridge. But my favorite place to be is the meal prep fridge, because then I know that all my things are good to go. Before I got so busy with other things, that's what I would usually be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have to ask you though, because I struggle with this all the time as a developer, and I constantly have my fridge and then I've got a small mini fridge, right? So because of different projects and things I'm working on all the time, and then my own health goals and all that stuff like that. Do you have multiple fridges?
Yes.
You have to.
Well, the reason I got them was for the book, because I had told my publisher when I signed on, and I was like, you know, it's very important to me to show the three main types of fridges and how to organize right. them, because everybody doesn't have a French door fridge, you know? And right. I really wanted to get that basic model fridge that I had when I had rent, when I was renting apartments or, you know, homes, that is just that freezer top white refrigerator. And what was funny is I was writing the book during the pandemic. And so it had just been declared like a national emergency, and the first fridge arrived. And so I had to put it in my living room because I don't have a very big kitchen. So we told them, yeah, just put it right there. Then a few weeks later, the last fridge arrived. I go to them, yeah, you can just put it over on that wall next to the other fridge. And I think that, you know, it was during the time of the toilet paper hoarders. I yes. think they thought I was a fridge hoarder. So I literally have... right next to my kitchen, I have a wall that is technically part of my living room, but then you walk through that. I have a galley kitchen and you walk through to my home office. So it's right between there. I call it Fridge Alley or Fridge Row. And I have my two other fridges from the book. And we thought we would be getting rid of the fridges by now, but I have so many projects with different yeah. brands, and it really is nice to have a space where I can set up a project fridge while my family can still function with our normal fridge.
So, oh, absolutely. My husband doesn't know what to eat, what he's allowed to eat, like in the fridge half the time. And I feel so bad. And he'll be like, I'm going to go get something. I'm like, no, you can have like XYZ. He'll be like, okay.
My husband is so gun shy to eating things too. Yeah. And I'll be like, oh, that's released now. Like, you yep, can actually
yep,
eat
exactly.
that.
Yep. I photographed that one. You're good to go. Go ahead, have exactly. it. Like, I know what's happening there. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad to know I'm not alone there.
Not at all. And yeah, it's really nice to have a little extra space when you're recipe developing. I mean, it's yeah. very hard.
Yes. I actually just went through a big choice where I was trying to decide, because I've had this mini fridge forever, and for the most part it serves its purpose, but then I find myself running out of freezer space, because sometimes when I'm done with something but need to move on to something else, I'm like, well, I don't want to waste it, I don't have time to run it down to donate it anywhere, so like I'll freeze it. But I thought, well, maybe I'll get a big freezer, but then I just couldn't. I was like, do I get the freezer, do I stay with the mini fridge, freezer me. I ended up staying with the mini fridge for now. We'll see how long it lasts.
I know, and you know, some of the new fridges are really cool because you can convert them completely into a freezer or a fridge, which is really neat, because they've kind of made the compressors in a way where so it's really nice. Like if you're going on vacation or something, and you can like turn off the freezing capability. And these are the newer models when I was researching the book, and I was like, wow, that is so neat. I know Samsung makes one. So that is another option.
Yeah, your mind must have just been blown when you started researching certain things, because obviously you started writing it knowing a wealth of information already. But then when you did deep dives, I'm sure you were like, wait, what?
Yes. And it was
amazing.
I really hope that someone will make a history of like a museum of the history of refrigeration. I know that maybe I'm the only one who would go, but it just... there's so much there, and I learned so much. And like some of the ice boxes that were made in the US, like there's a company I refer to in the book, but you got to look at their stuff, because now they're being retrofitted into fridges, but they're like gorgeous, like pieces of furniture. And I just feel like it needs to be archived somewhere, all of this.
I'm surprised it's not. I mean, maybe it is, and we don't actually. If it were, I'm sure you would know. So that's silly of me to even say that. Well, we have part two of the book. It's titled Fridge Settings, Cleaning, Storage, and Organization. You actually talk about the functionality of a fridge and how all of the elements work. What do you think is something most people at home might not be recognizing about how their fridge works? Like what's an element that they're just sort of unaware of?
Well, your fridge is actually extracting heat from the inside. So I always thought that it was blowing cold air in, but similar to like an air conditioning, it's extracting heat out. So every time really that you're opening your doors or you're putting something warm, like a great example is cans of, you know, seltzer water or sodas, like you put a whole big bunch of cans in there that are warm, and it really is you're going to hear your system start on your fridge. And that's because, oh, the temperature's gone to a certain point. The fridge knows I need to extract heat out of this. And that's what you're hearing. So actually when you're hearing your fridge, like now I'm like, it's like whale sounds to me or something. Cause I'm like, oh yeah. Like we just put that in there and now I hear the system going on. Like it's my husband, he is happy because now I can diagnose fridges. Like I helped with his mom's fridge that died. I'm like almost a refrigerator repair person now. So, but yeah, I would definitely say your fridge is extracting heat and you really got to be mindful about when you're putting stuff in there and then being mad at your fridge. Like, why is there all this water and condensation? Well, you just put a container of really hot soup into your fridge. Yeah. And yeah. That's why, you know what I mean? So it's kind of just like, maybe I'm an ambassador for fridges to kind of explain to people, like, this is why you're getting these results. You know,
no, I mean, that's actually when I asked you, you know, what's something we might not be recognizing. That was the thing I read where I was like, huh? So I was actually I'm happy you brought that one up because that was the one I was thinking, but I didn't know where you'd go. And you go over fridge types from basic freezer top fridges, side by side fridges and French door models. You talk about the temperature settings and humidity. You go into depth about cleaning your fridge. What's a tip from the book you can give our listeners about keeping the refrigerator clean?
Yeah, you know, doing a deep clean 3 to 4 times a year is a great starting place. And one really good tip I've found is to get whatever cooler you use in the summertime and put your items in there while you're, because you really want to take everything out and then take a picture and try to remove as many of the like door components and shelves from your fridge as possible. And you don't need to use anything fancy. Like I'll wash that in the sink with like warm soapy water. And you can even just, you know, wipe down with a cloth. It doesn't have to be any special spray or any of that. And get everything out of the fridge. Take all of the components that you can out. And the reason I say to take a picture is like, I remember one time I did this and I was like, wait, where does this go? Like, I legit did not remember because I had gone a little too far and taken a little too much out. And I was like, I just don't even remember where this piece goes. So take that picture and then keep everything in the cooler so that, again, you're trying to keep that temperature so that when you put everything back in your unit after you're done cleaning, it won't have to work so hard. And then when you are done doing the deep clean, let your refrigerator run for like 1 to 2 hours to go through a few cycles before you start putting new stuff in. And another great tip is if you're going on vacation, that's a great time to do a deep clean when you come back or before you leave, because you kind of don't want to have that much fresh food in the fridge if you're leaving. And that can be a great time to kind of get that done. So you come back home to a nice clean fridge. And then one other tip I'd say is if you're in a very hot climate, just don't do the summer clean out. Like I kind of say, do it every quarter. But if you're in a really hot climate, then you're okay to skip that summer one just because you're going to be combating so much temperature there. So,
thank goodness. Listeners, wealth of information here. You're getting on the podcast. Imagine if you get this book, because there's no way we can cover it all. She has the answers. We're just skimming the surface. And I needed this book. And a couple things you say in the beginning is treating the refrigerator with respect, which, you know, you've mentioned already, sort of as a temple of sorts. And I just love that because I had a little fight with my refrigerator about 6 months ago. And we had a repair person come in and I kind of looked at it after the repair person came and I was like, I literally had a conversation. I was like, I've been being really hard on you. Like I put you through a lot. I put a lot of food in here. There's a lot of things I do with food. I need to be nicer to you. And ever since then, we've been on good terms. So I get what you're saying with that. But I really was like at my wits with it. But it's just, you got to be nice to your fridges, everybody.
Yes. And that's
they'll be nice thing. Back to you.
Stop talking bad about our old fridges. The crazy thing is that old fridges are still rocking it out right now. Like I talk about the average fridge life, but there are people who have fridges straight from the 60s and 70s. And even like the first fridges, the monitor top fridges, like from the World War II era, you know, and they're still going strong. And fridges they were designed in a way that they will continue to work for a really long time. Like they do, they serve their function well. And the things that you're seeing right now, why everyone wants a new fridge, is just the bells and whistles that they put on the outside. Just like a car drives, but everybody wants the Bugatti or, you know, the next fancy car, but it's the same function. So I really try to say in the book, like, you don't need a beautiful fridge on the outside to have a beautiful fridge on the inside. And you really got to love the fridge you're with. And, you know, I still have my fridge from 2013, my French door fridge, and she's going strong. And I love that fridge. I don't ever anticipate getting rid of that fridge, but I also know that I'm a raging fridge geek. So like, but I also just want to say to people, because people say, I want to do what you do, but my fridge is old and gross. And I really wanted to say, like, no, I've helped many family members and friends with, you know, organize their fridges. I've seen all kinds of fridges in different states, and you can make any fridge better. Anyone.
I mean, Kristen, maybe you are the founder of the Refrigerator Museum. Maybe this is I'm just putting that little entrepreneurial, you know, little idea under your cap. Take it and run with it. It's all yours. I'm just saying.
Thank you, Dustin.
Yes, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, you've got guiding principles to fridge organization in here. One of them is think outside the crisper drawers. So What's meant by this?
That means that why are we hiding all of our best food that we want to eat more of in our drawers? You don't have to do what your fridge tells you to do. You can actually create the same kind of human environment in any other part of your fridge. So, for example, a celery, you put it in a grocery bag, it goes in there. And then a week later, you're like, oh, dang, it's wilted and I wasted it. I didn't eat it. Now imagine taking that celery, putting it in a glass spaghetti glass jar, putting a little bit of water in the bottom, tenting it with either a silicone bag, a reusable bag, or that same grocery bag. And now it's on your center eye level shelf. And you're like, oh, that celery. Okay, I'm going to cut that up. I'm going to make a really good soup, you know, and all of a sudden, you're actually using your produce, you're getting inspired by it, you're way more likely that it's not going to result in food waste. So I'm like, take all that goodness out of the drawers and bring it eye level, and you're going to see how much more produce you're actually eating during the week, because it's eye level for it's front of mind.
Front of mind, which is one of the other principles. I love it so much. And less is actually more. What's that one given us?
Yeah, you know, it's just like the capsule closet idea, which is I have nothing to wear, but I have like 700 pieces of clothing. It's because there's too much selection at that point.
And Kristen, why do I feel like you're yelling at me right now? Oh, why do I feel like you're talking right at me when you say that?
I mean, kind of. I had to do it myself in my closet. This is after I wrote the book, but I was like, it really works. Having less clothes, I feel like I have more, you know, yes. And it's the same principle, but there's another function here, which is airflow. You're allowing airflow in your refrigerator. Space means airflow. And that means that your temperature and conditions in your fridge are at the ideal levels. When you're overstuffing your fridge and your freezer, especially, you're causing problems within your refrigerator that will result in either repairs or, you know, a bunch of food going bad. And so it's a way of thinking like you don't need to overstuff your fridge. You know, the United States, we already have the biggest fridges in the world. Do we really need to overstuff them to that level? You know, really just be, so instead of putting all your cans in at once, maybe put a third of your cans in and then restock it. And then you could use that space for something else or leave that space so that you're having better airflow. You know, so it's just a way of thinking differently, you know, because a lot of people are like, I'm going to put as much as I can so I don't have to go grocery shopping. But, oh, you're still having food waste because you have so much. So it's really talking about that.
Well, the three guiding principles are front of fridge, front of mind, think outside the crisper drawers, and less is actually more. And you call this the perfect marriage of function and motivation, and I love that. Aww. You go on to talk about container sizes, fridge bins, trays, section containers, and then you discuss organizing for specific refrigerator types and using a lazy Susan and eco-friendly storage solutions like dish towels, cloth produce bags, and cloth bowl covers, just to name a few eco-friendly options here you have in the book. And then you give best practices for different stages in life. This was so genius, from dorm life with a mini fridge to empty nesters and retired couples. Like, you really made sure everyone was covered in here. And just talking to, you know, you're talking to scientists, you've got multiple fridges in your home. So people, we can trust this information in Fridge Love. It is coming from a genuine place, from the founder of the Future Refrigerator Museum. So I feel good about it.
Oh my goodness.
I love it. Part three is the produce and prep and storage guide. Right off the bat, what do you think is the most common misstep people might take when it comes to storing and prepping produce?
The common mistake or misstep is that people think that everything is going to last the same amount of time. And that's just not how it is. Every single piece of produce has a different shelf life capability. And to reach its full potential, again, you have to think of all the different factors that are influencing it. So in the beginning of that section, which is my favorite section of this book, this is what I wanted to get in out in the world more than anything, because people would say, oh, you store your strawberries already sliced. I tried doing that and they're all mushy and gross and disgusting. And I would be like, wow, why am I getting such a different result than this person? And when I wrote the book and started, you know, researching and you know, all the different, you know, food science textbooks and all the different things I went through, I realized that, oh, it's actually these factors that are influencing every piece of produce. So the strawberries I have that I bought at the store are vastly different than the same type of strawberry bought in Minnesota. And it's different than the ones bought in New York, because they all had a different path to get to where they were sold, whether that's a farmer's market or a grocery store. And so a lot of the things, we don't even know what they've been through. Like, they could be in the cold chain and there was a big disruption. I just went on a trip down to Southern California and I saw like a caravan of, tomato trucks, and there are tomatoes like just in the back of this giant truck. And I was like, oh wow, those tomatoes on the top are going to have a way different shelf life than the tomatoes on the bottom, because they're being exposed to all the sun. We were in traffic, and it just reminded me of all of this. Like, so that's what people need to understand, is you're never going to get the same results, but we can be in the ballpark, which is what I try to provide in the book. And understanding your unique situation, the seasonality, that's why for every type of produce, I give the peak seasonality. So you can know like, oh, okay, this was something I bought in peak season. It's going to have a different shelf life capability than something that was imported from another country, you know? So it's really looking at each item and kind of getting a gauge on the things that last longer, the sturdier vegetables, keeping those, holding those back till later in your shopping cycle. Let's say you go shopping on the seventh day, every seventh day, and you really want to try to get 6 days of food in your fridge. Then you're going to save something like red cabbage, carrots, and radishes later in that week, because you know that they have a longer shelf life than things that are going to go bad faster, you know? So I really try to lay it out for every type of produce, so you can get home from shopping and be like, what's the best way to store this? How long will it last if I actually chop it? How long will it last if I dice it? And I really wanted to get granular on that, so that people, whatever your spectrum is, if you're prepping or not, you could make the best decision for you and the produce you have available.
Well, and that goes in line with, you talk about avoiding sort of blanket fridge storage advice, which
yes.
I thought was so brilliant, because so many people, there's, you know, all these tips and tricks, people say, do this, do that, when really that's just blanket advice. Instead, you go into talking about the life cycle of produce and the freshness factors, including temp, humidity, respiration, water, oxygen, mechanical damage, microorganisms, chemicals in the environment, light exposure, and plant structure and enzymes. And everybody, I'm telling you, you go through all the fruits and vegetables. Like, I want to get, like, you know, those little mini post-its, and I suggest everyone else does this too. Like, I would love another version of this, like a spiral bound one where I can sort of like color coded. You can like flip to the different, I mean, maybe that's the follow-up, like a seasonal sort of like where it really just lists the fruits and vegetables, because you go over such a great sort of thorough approach to the different ways to store things. Like just, I mean, artichokes to bananas, melons, cabbage, garlic, eggplant, mint, kale, literally everything in between here. She's got it in the book, everybody. Is there a vegetable or a fruit or that surprised you the most during the process of writing this book where you were like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect that to happen with it?
Yeah, you know, well, I used to hate beets back in the day, but then I became a nutritarian and my tastes changed and I really enjoyed all kinds of produce more than before. And beets was one of the ones that I really liked. But when I was researching this part of the book, a lot of what I did for this didn't even make it into the book in this section. They had to condense it because we had a page limit. So I had gone into kind of the history of each type of produce because I found it fascinating. And beets were one of the ones I found most fascinating because you're actually getting two vegetables for one. Because beets were made for their stems and their leaves, similar to like a Swiss chard. And it wasn't till later that we started eating the roots, which is what everyone thinks of now. Like you buy the bag of loose beets and it's the root part. So one great thing for your listeners is when you get beets that have the stems attached, you're actually getting two awesome pieces of produce for the price of one, because you can take the stems off. They act like celery in a salad, but they're gorgeous. Yes. And like either, you know, that beautiful fuchsia or red or the golden beets. So I love adding those to salads. You can saute the greens or you can use the greens as you would as spinach or kale in your smoothies. So beets was one of my favorites, and they also last forever in the fridge, either, you know, uncooked or cooked. And so they're something that you get a lot of mileage from. And the color, like if people see any of my fridge pictures on social media, there's always an element of either pink or purple, and that's either usually a beet or it's quick pickled onions. And so I like having a pop of color in your fridge, because it just makes you feel happy when you open the doors. Yes. And it magnifies all the other colors.
You're so right. You're so right. It does make you feel happy. That is so true. And I mean, as if this book is not thorough enough to this point, we're going to move into part four, which is the recipes. And I think you know by now that Miss Kristen is not just going to jump right into some recipes. First, you explain the organization of recipes in the book as they work for your fridge goals. And then you get into some basic meal prep, which I love. And if you aren't meal prepping at home, you aren't saving valuable energy in your week, everybody. I promise you, meal prep is gold. And you offer some great meal prep menus right off the bat, and even give us healthy fridge must-haves with produce snack jars, easy veggie cups, and easy fruit cups, little jars full of fresh cut vegetables or fruit, which I have already put into practice in the house. So thank you for that.
I love it.
Yes, 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 yes. Little bits at a time here. But then we get into sauces. What is a sauce you make from this book that you have on hand in the house always?
Oh, it's the tahini yum sauce, which is like a mix of coconut aminos, Dijon mustard, and like no salt seasoning with tahini and water. And all the tahini sauces in the beginning of the book, I love because you could literally just get like half a jar of tahini and make a variety of sauces really fast. So you could have different flavors to add to your different salads or bowls or meals. But that's one I really love because it's really diverse. And, you know, you can put it on top of like a stir fry or a saute. I even will put it over soup sometimes. It's really good as a salad dressing. So that's one I usually have on hand.
Next in the fridge, and we've talked about this a little bit, you've mentioned it, the salad bar, but can you expand on the fridge salad bar for us?
Yes, this is what I say. If you are interested, if any of this sounds good to you and you're like, I want to do more of that, start with an in-fridge salad bar and just grab a lettuce, grab your favorite toppings, and then pre-chop that for the week. Put them in those spaghetti jars. I'm a big fan. Or, you know, mason jars, whatever you have on hand. And then you kind of, if you want, you can put it in a bin in your fridge, pull out the whole bin at once. And now my family, I'll pull it out. Everyone will grab what they like on their salad. We've got those quick sauces. And you just make a really nice, nourishing salad. Throw some garbanzo beans on there, maybe some seeds. And I just kind of give a list of a planning guide where you can kind of see different combinations or toppings that are really good to use. And I really feel like people, like, we need to make really nice textured salads a thing. And that was something I learned from the Nutritarian Lifestyle, was the power of having like a big salad every day and what kind of energy it gives you. It really is like an instant energy boost. And that's one change you can make that will improve your life, your health. And you're going to get an impact, a direct impact, just after the first few days of eating a large salad with a good amount of fresh produce toppings.
Well, I love that you just came back to the way it makes you feel, because you mentioned that in the beginning, sort of on your whole path to Hello Nutritarian as it was, is the way the food was making you feel. And I was reading, I have this a journal that I have that gives a little prompts in it. And one of the questions today was, what food do you eat that makes you feel good? What food do you eat that makes you feel bad? And of course, I've thought about these things before, but that is such a simple question that people really need to ask themselves. If you just stop and you think about, you know, when you eat, if so many people, I think, will eat something and be like, oh gosh, I don't feel great. And they kind of like whatever it, right? Yeah. And I'm like, but we shouldn't whatever it. Like, I mean, I'm guilty of it too. So trust, I've been there. But like, we shouldn't whatever it. If we're feeling not great after we eat something, that's a red flag. We should be like, huh, maybe I won't eat that anymore. Or maybe a little less of that next time, you know? So I love that you talk about the fridge salad bar and the way those foods make you feel.
Yeah, it's just the energy. Like, I even in my website, when you join my email list, I give a 7-day salad cleanse where it's a salad every day. And you can level it up if you want and have 2 salads a day. But you really can see in 1 week the huge energy boost. And even one of my good friends who, you know, has no interest in vegan eating or nutritarian eating or anything like that, she had like her cholesterol went up. And so she's like, oh, Kristen's always eating salads. I'm going to eat a salad every day. And her cholesterol went down just from that one change. So it really is impactful.
I love that. And honestly, a salad a day, I mean, that should just be a t-shirt. A salad a day.
I love that.
It's a really great, I've actually been trying to implement that more now that I think about it. I hadn't really thought about it. So I left a fridge salad bar sort of in the fridge for my husband last week when I was traveling. I said, because he loves salads, but he doesn't want to get into the chopping all. I said, babe, look, I got you. There's this, that, blah, 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 blah. And I came home and then he was traveling for something and all of it was gone. So I want to think that he ate it. I didn't press. I'm hoping that he did and it didn't get, you know, like tossed to make it look like he ate it, but I have a feeling he did eat it. So it
so
works.
Awesome. I
put it all front and center too. I was like, listen, I have the tips. I know what to do.
Okay. That was the sweetest thing ever. I love that.
Well, and as long as he ate, I'm going to assume he ate it. Let's just assume he ate it. I think he probably did. So I don't want to ask because I don't want to be crushed, but maybe it's a good answer. I shouldn't think so negatively. You get into an array of oil-free hummuses next. You've got classic and pumpkin and chocolate. I'm here for all of those. And then we have blended or chopped condiments. What are a couple of your favorite condiments from here to have on hand?
Oh, always pickled red onions. And now it's become like a thing. Like my husband, like he's like, where's the pickled red onions? Because that's one thing I started really early. And I literally just put white vinegar. And I list that in there. I also give other brines too that are not as intense. I love vinegar flavor, so I can handle that, but they mellow over time. But it's just too easy. Like you literally chop onions and you pour vinegar on top. It turns this beautiful color. It has like this rich flavor. You literally don't have to do anything else. And you can keep it for so long. Even longer than my publisher would allow me to say, you know?
Yeah. So no, I've had some in the fridge and I'm like, I can still eat that, right?
Yes,
and I can.
Yes. And that's the one thing I want to say too, is like, I push the bounds of food shelf life, you know, because that's what I do. And I also am like interested in that. And things last much longer than we think. And, you know, it's part of the culture where, you know, there's the suspicion around food, and I get it. There's foodborne illnesses and all of that. It's understandable, but I can tell you from my own experience, I always push the limits, and I haven't, knock on wood, had any issues. But this is something I learned from my mother-in-law, because my husband and mother-in-law are Korean, and they have a very different approach to food than we do in the West, where they'll cook rice and leave it in the rice cooker for a day or two. And that is very normal. And she will cook a pot of soup and leave it on the stove overnight in that same pot. And they, you know, they have pickling with kimchi, and it's a different approach to food. And that let me kind of have the creative freedom to be like, well, let's just see what happens here and what I can push the boundaries. And what I've found overall in general is in the West, we are way too suspicious of food. And we have like these amazing modern technologies that make it almost foolproof, but we're still suspicious of it. So, you know, the smell test is, it really does work. So like when you're talking about your pickled onions that have been there a long time, yes, you can eat those, you know? And so, but you know, my publisher only felt so comfortable, but that is just something that I have found in my own experience.
Well, and when we're looking at the pickling items in here, we cannot overlook the apple cider vinegar and mint shredded beets. Yes, come on.
That's a good one. Again, you know, I just love on those beets.
Oh, well, and it just sounds, the mint, that sounds just like such a perfect little kiss right there. Just a little kiss of mint. I love it so much. Yes. I'm into it. Well, and then I'm really into this next one. We got smoothie freezer packs. Tell the listeners about smoothie freezer packs.
So it's just taking the ingredients that you can freeze, so everything except the liquid, and putting it into a little silicone bag or whatever reusable baggie or whatever you have on hand. And then in the morning, you just grab it out, dump it in the blender, or you can let it thaw a little bit on the counter while you're getting ready, then dump it in, add your liquid, and then you're good to go. It's just a really fast, easy way to get a smoothie in. And my kids will do these even after school too, especially with the blueberry smoothie. They really like that one. So
good.
Yeah. And it's just an easy thing that you can prep ahead for yourself. Why buy those little daily harvest ones when you could make it at home?
You can make it at home. You know exactly what's in it. And this is, but you know, at the beginning of this, when we started talking about part four, I was telling everyone meal prep is gold. I'm telling you this because it's things like this. When you have it ready, if you got it ready, you ain't got to get it ready. It's there. It's exactly. done for you. You can just put it right in the blender. It's a no brainer then.
Yes.
And you've got some overnight oats in here. You have a few in here. What's one that your kids love?
Oh, they love the traditional overnight oats. They're purists.
I love that.
I love the dragon fruit one. I mean, that one my husband really, really loves. But I think for my kids, it's a little too exotic. They like their plain vanilla. And we'll actually all make it together, like especially before school during the summers. I'll be like on Sunday, all right, we'll gather all the ingredients and then sit and mix it. It's very easy for kids to do. So it's something that I think overnight oats is such a great way to get your kids thinking about meal prepping in a way that's not going to cause you headaches, like having to guide them through every step. It's just very easy, like mixing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so yeah, I love overnight oats.
I do too. I love having them ready in the morning. It's the perfect thing. And it's very satiating, right?
Yeah.
It's a hearty breakfast where you're like, oh, I actually feel good about what I ate and it was ready. It's done. Great. On my way.
And you have
morning
energy.
Morning is a very busy time and you have energy. Yes.
Yes.
And I'm a snacker. So you've got a fridge bite section in here. It really spoke to me. I need to make these carrot cake fridge bites and the peanut butter and jelly oatmeal fridge bites seem like a winner to me too. Just tasty, tasty. And we're in soup season, so you've got some soups in here. A nice variety. If someone just picked up this book, what is a soup you would tell them to make first?
Well, how about this? They don't even need to pick up the book because on my Amazon page, I put the first recipe I made for this book, which is the Chipotle lentil soup. And you can get it for free on the book Amazon page. And just try it. Like
give it a spin.
Yes. And it's so few ingredients. And so much of the heavy lifting is done by the can of Chipotle with adobo sauce, which is something I always have in the fridge. And it's just such a hearty, really beautiful soup that even my kids like now, which is shocking to me. And my husband loved since the minute I made it. So that is like one of my favorite soups that I will eat all year long. Like I'm not a soup season person. I'm a soup all the time person. Evergreen.
Me too. Me too. And I'm definitely going to make that one. Any tips for, maybe it's in the book, but when you open that can of Chipotle and adobo, what tips for preserving what you don't use?
Yes. So well, I've been working with a brand called Food Huggers, and they make like these little silicone caps kind of that you can put on half an onion or you could put on a can. And I've been putting it on my Chipotle can because Chipotle and adobo does not go bad. It's a condiment. It's salted and it's preserved. So I've been popping it on the can and just leaving it in there. I'll usually use my can up within about 2 weeks at the most. But just with that popped on top has been fine. Or you can transfer it into a glass container or jar if you feel better that way. You can totally do that. But that's what I've been doing as of lately since I've been using food huggers. I really do like them for that. And you can actually use the leftovers to put in a chipotle mayo, which I give tips for that in the mayo recipe. And you can flavor your tahini sauces with chipotle also. So there's a lot of uses for the rest of that can.
I love that. It's just, you know, it's that and tomato paste. You got those two little cans there.
You're always
wait a minute, you know?
Always.
Well, there's a great category for must-know cooked veggies like simply blanched broccoli, simply sauteed greens, and simply blanched spinach, and some roasted vegetables as well. I love, love, love that you get into some basics with vegetables for everyone here. And you've got one-pot meals and side dishes. I got my eye on this easy potato dal curry. What is one-pot meal you might serve to a guest from here?
Definitely the one you just mentioned, because it's so pretty. You've got like the yellow, green, and red. I mean, this is also really nice for the holidays to serve, but it's easy. Like, that's an easy, satisfying dish that even meat eaters will enjoy. And then I would just serve it with a really nice salad and you call it a day. Like, soup and salad to me is classic, and this stew is so pretty that you could totally serve it and people would love with some good bread. You got it.
Yeah, and so satiating. And there's a great section covering plant-based proteins in here. Is there one of these you find you use the most?
Yes, it's the simple baked tofu, because it can kind of act like a grilled chicken, and you can add it to salad prep jars, or you can, you know, add it to any kind of bowl that you're making with a grain and vegetable and then use that as your protein. So and my kids love it. So it's something that I usually will have made in the fridge, or they'll have it at least once a week in our dinner rotation. So that one is just served me well for so many years, and it's just a go-to recipe in my house. And it's also another fun one to make with the kids, because they're dipping it in the coconut aminos, and it's very nice. Like, very good for kids to do.
And you've got a 4-step prep for prep bowls in here. What is a prep bowl, and what's your favorite prep bowl?
Okay, so I really love one recipe in this book that I'm in love with is the broccoli falafel. And it's the one that my editor made after I submitted my recipes for the book. And she was just like, couldn't say enough about it. And my husband like absolutely loves it. And now my kids love it, which is crazy because they have no idea that there's broccoli in it.
Done and done. Yes.
Right? So that is my favorite prep bowl from this. Also, I love the sweet and sour meatballs, but this one, because I really love Mediterranean flavors. And then the quinoa tabbouleh with it is just so good. And then the pickled red cabbage, but there's cilantro in the falafel and there's broccoli in it. And there's a little bit of turmeric. So it has this beautiful green yellow inside, which is why we show it in the book kind of cut, because it is so pretty. So I love when food looks beautiful, has great color, and it has great ingredients and also tastes good. And I think that these broccoli falafel and the falafel prep bowls is like a really good signature meal prep that everyone can get around and enjoy.
Well, and I love bowls in general, because it's a complete plate. You have all the nutrients you need on there. It's just a great way to get everything in, and always, you know, usually very hearty and satisfying too. So I love them.
I know. I eat mostly bowls, and most of the recipe creators I know eat bowls. Like, that's what we really eat, because you're taking bits and bobs of everything and you're just creating a plate.
That's exactly. You really are. You're like, at the end of the day, you've got little pieces of different stuff and you're like, well, I'm just going to make a bowl then. It's perfect.
Exactly.
You've got salad jars in here as well. And this reminds me sort of the salad shakers at McDonald's from years ago.
Oh my gosh. I forgot about those.
Well, these are a little more functional than the salad shaker. If you recall, maybe you didn't get one, but they were very small. And the idea was you could sort of shake them up. And I'm like, but you can't. There's no like, there's no room in here to shake these, you know. And these are God. Your jars are different because we're talking big size here. You have room to move around in there. And I'm always up for a Caesar, and there's a kale Caesar in here, and I'll have to try that. Plus, maybe this crunchy Thai noodle salad jar too looks so good. And for those who like a little cream in their coffee, there's a pumpkin spice cashew creamer, and it is David approved. That's my husband. He loves cream in his coffee, and he's very picky about it. So it's David approved.
Love it.
And for the kiddos here, you've got the 3-seed chocolate milk, but let's be honest, it's for adults too. Adults deserve chocolate milk too. And you've got a section here for on-demand favorites, reconfiguring components ahead to easily assemble on-demand meals. What's the most on-demand meal from this section in your house?
Well, we like on Sundays doing fresh oatmeal. And so we'll do like an oatmeal bar where we make a big batch, and then we have all the different toppings and like fridge jams and that kind of stuff, nut butters, and everybody goes through and gets their favorite. And then we can take whatever leftovers, because we'll make a big batch, and then freeze those in little cups. And like, this is for like the colder months we're in now, instead of the overnight oats. And then my kids will kind of add their toppings to it, pop it in the freezer, and then they can just grab it, heat it in the microwave, and have a really good oatmeal breakfast. Because I am not a fan of cereals. Like, we don't have cereal in the house for the kids. So this is kind of my version of an alternative, where it's easy and it's a no-brainer, and you're using something that you made for like a nice family meal, and then extending that out for the rest of the week.
Oh, that's lovely. And you're so right on cereals. There are just... You know, there's so many cereals, I think, too, that claim to be a healthy cereal, and there's just no such thing.
I know. I feel like they're a dessert. You know, I loved cereal growing up. I was a cereal kid. I was a 90s kid.
Sure. Like, yeah, me too. Come on.
The variety pack, and I would just like go through them all like in one sitting almost, and just, you know, but we know better, right? Our parents didn't know what we know now. Right.
Exactly.
So like, I really try, and I see a huge difference in my kids, like when they're eating well, or when we're like on a holiday and not, like, yes, you just see the difference, not just in behavior, but also just in their skin and their mood. It just impacts so much.
Yeah. And cereal too is that thing of, you know, efficiency again. I mean, it's where we're all caught up in this world. Like, how can we do it fast? So I love that you've created this other variation here that we can, it can be ready. It can be at the ready and ready to go, and no muss, no fuss. I love it.
Yes.
Well, we wrap things up with an easy chocolate parfait and a yummy, easy autumn parfait with cinnamon apple fridge jam, oil-free sweetened granola, pumpkin hummus, and pomegranate seeds. Yum, yum. I mean, what a great note to end on. What a book, Kristen. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I really wanted to over deliver because I'm like, I never want to write another cookbook. So I'm putting everything in this. I was on another interview, and they're like, you could have split this into like 3 books. I'm like, no, I'm only got this one book in me. And I'm just putting it all in there.
Listen, it's good you know that. It's good you know that for yourself. That's a great sort of boundary to have from the beginning, to be like, it's coming all out in here. That's the way it's going to be. Well, this is the part where I ask you, it's your book brag moment. Okay. And I ask you now to sort of give me your book brag. What's something you want to brag about a book, or something you're most proud of when it comes to this book?
You know what I'm most proud of is what I just said. This is a book where I over deliver. There is so much that I put into this. Like I said, some of it we couldn't get in, like the history of vegetables. It might have just been me who would have been into that. But I really wanted to give anybody who picks this up is going to find it useful. Like, that was my goal when I was writing it. I wasn't just writing to a niche audience. I wanted anyone on the spectrum of, oh, they don't cook that much, or they do cook all the time, or they don't meal prep, or they're into it, but they don't know how. I wanted to like cover as many bases as possible. So I love that I made goals that are, some can be stretch goals, but there's something you can do right now. And I love that it's just packed with tons of useful information. And I really set out to answer every single question I had gotten over the years. And I did it. Like, I answered them all. And I'm very, very proud of it in general.
As you should be. You over-delivered in the best way, and I'm grateful, and I know many other people will be as well, because this will help so many people organize their refrigerator for a healthier, happier life. And now we're going to get into your rapid-fire round of questions. Are you ready?
Yay, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Number one, what is a show you binge-watch during lockdown?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so there were so many, but it was Ozark. That was the big one.
There we go. You know, I keep trying to go back to that. It's just that first episode just hits me in so many emotions. And I'm like, ha.
It really is scary.
Which I am a scary kind of guy when it comes to my entertainment choices. So my husband's very confused too. He's like, I don't understand why you're not. I'm like, I'm into it. I just for some reason can't continue down the path.
Do you watch Westworld by any chance?
I have not yet.
Okay. What you just described is what happened to me when I watched the first episode of Westworld, and I have never touched it again. Like, it's too scary for me.
Okay. All right. Then I'm gonna check that out too and follow up with you and see how I feel after the first episode of that. Goodness. Food on a skewer or a tiny spoon?
Oh, I think a skewer. Definitely.
All right. Hot sauce or barbecue sauce?
Hot sauce.
Favorite kitchen tool, excluding your refrigerator?
I just got this wavy cutter, which we had gone to the river during the summer for my 40th birthday, and they had it was an older home, and they had this cool wavy cutter, and I cut the watermelon in these waves, and I was obsessed. Like, I started cutting everything in waves. I even have one now at home, but that is definitely my favorite kitchen tool right now, just because it's so cool. And my family thinks I'm ridiculous, but I love it.
You're like, have you seen how many refrigerators we have? What do you expect at this point? Come on now. Embrace me, family. I love that.
Right?
And happy late birthday. Welcome to the 40 Club. We're in this together.
I'm loving it.
What is a favorite container you use in your fridge? You know, all of these different containers we're talking about. But for Kristen, what is a favorite? Like, what do you have, like a vessel where you're just like, oh, yeah, that one works the best. And I love that.
It's got to be my mason jars. And I have so many of them, but mason jars is just, it's my classic. You know, it was one of the first things I invested in after I went through all of my recycled stuff. And it just, I've had these same jars now for years, since 2016, and they're going strong, and they can do so many things. I just love mason jars. I love them.
Yes. I agree. I'm on the same page there with you. Favorite sauce to put on pasta?
Oh, I love a good, just a classic tomato sauce. And you know what? I actually, from Drew Barrymore's cookbook, she had a really good harissa pasta sauce that was it's really good with harissa paste, a little bit of pasta water, some tomato paste, and like she did halved cherry tomatoes wilted in the skillet.
Great.
And we tried that and my husband loved it.
Oh, that's great. That sounds tasty. I'm going to have to try it. And this one, you may have this already considering the number of fridges you have, but what's your dream refrigerator?
Oh, okay. So I was on TikTok, which I need to get on, but I was stalking TikTok. And sure. I had seen that in like Los Angeles, they have these walk-in custom built refrigerators that look like restaurant refrigerators, kind of like Kim Kardashian, but it's a big glass room. And then they just have these carts or like shelving with baskets and just tons of produce all around. And I was like, all right, that is dreamy. It's literally like the size of a room.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I like that too. What's your favorite kind of chocolate combination? You know, there's like chocolate and orange, chocolate pistachio, something to put with chocolate.
I love chocolate and raspberry.
Very good. Very good. Favorite spice to cook with?
Oh, turmeric. Definitely.
I just love the Indian spices in general, Indian food. I'm a big fan.
And what's your favorite vegetable and why?
Beets, like I explained earlier.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Why? Now, why beets?
Well, like you got the 2-for-1, you got the beet stems, and I love the color, and you can make beet hummus and beets just in general, like great on salads. I eat them just as a snack because I'm a weirdo. But
no,
I might as
great.
Well be like Dwight Schrute from The Office. But yeah, I love beets.
Oh, Shroot Farms. You and yes. Shroot Farms. He'd probably open that refrigerator museum with you is my feeling on Dwight.
Oh my gosh, I totally think he would.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So maybe you have a partner there. We've created your fictional business partner now. A celebrity you would send a gift basket of items to.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, you know, Drew Barrymore, I actually did a fridge for her, like inspired by her and her cookbook. And actually the chef that she wrote her cookbook with saw it. I tagged her and she was so sweet. She reshared it and everything. But yeah, I really love Drew Barrymore and she would be the one for sure.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. What's a TV game show you think you would excel at?
Oh my gosh, a game show. I know all the ones I wouldn't excel at, like Wheel of Fortune.
I don't think I would excel at any of them.
That's how I feel. Like, definitely not Wheel of Fortune. Jeopardy, like, I can get something sometimes and feel really awesome about it, but I don't think I would be able to get all of it. Like, it's too much. But I would like to think that maybe I could do Jeopardy. If they did, like, an Instagram version, maybe I could do that.
Oh, my gosh, I love that. I'm surprised they haven't come up with that. You're just an idea machine. I'm surprised they haven't come up with that yet. That's actually...
Well, I guess now it wouldn't even be Instagram, it'd be TikTok now.
Yes, you're correct. We're at the end of your rapid fire here. What is your most used emoji?
Oh, it's definitely the praying hands. It's always my top one.
Yep, mine is the shrug.
Oh, I love it.
Mine's like, oh, well, you did it. Well done.
Yay.
Well, congratulations again on this outstanding book, Fridge Love, Organize Your Refrigerator for a Healthier, Happier Life. Everyone, go buy this book everywhere books are sold. Get a copy for yourself and everyone you know. It makes an excellent gift. And Kristen, please tell everyone where they can find you on the internet and social media.
Absolutely. So I'm at hellonutritarian.com. That's my website. And then I am very active on Instagram at hellonutritarian. I also am on Facebook and I am about to get on TikTok, I promise. And it's going to be at hellonutritarian.
I love that. We'll all be waiting. Well, everyone, you know, I have to say, Kristen is a wealth of information and it goes way beyond the Fridge Love book. Go to hellonutritarian.com right now. She has lots of free goodies. She's already mentioned some of them. I mean, she really hooks you up with some great materials to help you along your way to a healthier, happier you on there. It's great to get you started. So definitely a site you want to go sign up on to be on the email list for and bookmark it, hellonutritarian.com. Kristen, thank you again for being a guest. It was so lovely to get to chat with you today.
I had such a fun time. This time just went by so quickly. I really, really enjoyed this, Dustin. And I thank you so much for your enthusiasm for the book and for having me on.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Keep On Cooking. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a review if you like the podcast. It helps a lot.
Yeah. And get more information on the podcast, Dustin's cookbooks, the Vegan Roadie series, and sign up for our newsletter at veganroadie.com.
And of course, follow us at The Vegan Roadie on all social media platforms. Now get in the kitchen and keep on cooking. And hey, remember, it's nice to be nice. This has been a Muzzy Cat production.